With me now from his home in Helena, Montana, is Clay Scott. Hello.
Hi there.
That was a terrific job you did on this documentary. I really appreciate that.
Thank you very much.
What got you interested in the Chattahoochee River in the first place?
Steve, it seemed like a story that could potentially bring together a variety of issues and also one that had the potential to lead to some interesting characters. Also, from a structural or a technical standpoint, the river itself provided a ready-made through line for the narrative. So I figured all I'd have to do would be to follow the river and talk to people along the way.
You were in Florida and Georgia, what, about 10 days?
Yeah.
I suppose you could have spent a lifetime there reporting. How much of a sense of the place do you think you were able to get in those 10 days?
I don't think it was nearly enough time. I think of a reporter coming from Atlanta, for example, to Montana, where I live, spending 10 days or so and writing a story. And naturally, of course, you're going to miss things or misunderstand things. And I wince a bit when I think of all the things that I'm sure I probably missed that someone more familiar with the story would be aware of. And also there are issues that of necessity I had to simplify. So no, it's not possible to understand all the complex issues in a story like this, but what you can do and what I tried to do is to bring at least some of the issues and questions to listeners' attention and to be able to paint a little bit of a picture of the region and some of the people who live in it.
Of course, sometimes when we live in a place, we don't see things that an outsider might see. Anything along those lines, what do you think that you noticed as an outsider in just those 10 brief days that perhaps the locals didn't quite see?
Well, I think many of the people who are involved in this issue or range of issues, and there are many complex issues here, it's sort of a classic case of people not being able to see the forest for the trees. And I think as an outsider, despite my relative lack of deep knowledge, I think I was able to better see the whole picture than perhaps some of the people who are have been intimately involved on a day-to-day basis for a long time.
Now, you go for 10 days, you get a lot of tape, you can't put that into a documentary that's about 20-some-odd minutes long. What were some of the issues that you weren't able to touch on in the piece?
Well, as I said, a lot of people I spoke to are deeply involved in the political aspect of the story. Florida and Georgia and Alabama, as well as Atlanta, as sort of a separate entity, have been fighting for years about the best way to distribute the water of the Chattahoochee and the Apalachicola and the Flint River. Then you have a dozen federal agencies. There are county officials and municipal officials. But I was not able to fit all the political complexity into my story, unfortunately. That was pretty much a deliberate choice on my part. In a print piece, a magazine article, for example, I think you would be able to touch on some of those issues in more depth. In radio, however, I think there's too great a danger that listeners would get bogged down. So I don't feel badly about having left a lot of the political complexity out of my story. I do feel a little bit badly about not getting into some other issues that cropped up and that interested me. For example, at the University of Georgia, I met a professor of anthropology named Ted Gregson, who's done some fascinating research on the ecological impact of lawns. Lawns, he says, are incredibly consumptive of water. That if we cut down on lawn use, that we can really conserve water. And I think that's an issue that's worth a story on its own, yet I couldn't find a way to make use of it in this story.
Talk a bit about how you go about reporting a story like this. Where do you start?
Well, you begin your research in a very mundane way, as you might imagine, just with library research, basically, internet research, phone calls, and little by little, those contacts lead to other contacts, and you get to the point where you can set up interviews and you get a rough idea of what it is you're trying to accomplish. But at the same time, a story like this needs characters in order to really come to life, and you can't find those characters in the library or on the internet for the most part. And the great joy for me of radio reporting has always been the serendipity of finding these characters. You know, there are people out there who will make or break your story, who have an almost transcendental voice. You know they're out there somewhere, but you never know who they are until they start talking.
Tell us about some of those characters you met along the way, whether or not they made it into your story.
One of my favorite characters was Violet Garrity, who did make it into the piece. She was someone who worked in a restaurant where I had dinner, and she was talking to me, and I heard the quality of her voice, and she was asking me what I was doing, and she was talking about growing up on Apalachicola Bay, and I knew I had to interview her immediately. Also, Marilyn Blackwell, a very interesting and remarkable and tough woman who lives in a remote part of northern Florida. I found that she was one of the voices that really gives life to the piece. She offered to take me out into the river in her boat, and I had no idea what was in store for me. But as soon as she started pointing out some of what was happening in the river and the swamps, and as soon as she started talking, I knew that she was going to be a vital voice in the piece.
Tell me about Philip Greer. How did you meet him?
Dr. Greer is the kind of person that you really only meet once in a lifetime. I met his son, Delbert, through somebody else who introduced us, and Delbert guided me through the Chattahoochee National Forest and took me to the source of the Chattahoochee River, and later he introduced me to his father, Philip Greer. Dr. Greer is a bit hard of hearing. He's lost most of his sight, and he wanted to know what I was doing there, and I had to shout to explain to him what I was doing in Helen, Georgia. And we had a very rudimentary conversation. And then he started talking, and I was just mesmerized by both the content of what he was saying and his tone of voice. He invited me out to the back porch to talk, and crickets were chirping and tree frogs were singing. And he just talked extemporaneously on the subject of who owns the water. And it was very poetic and philosophical and almost Whitman-esque. And the reason I was unable to use more of him in the piece was that he was simply too powerful, and that my editor and I reluctantly concluded that he would probably end up drawing too much focus away from the rest of the story.
There are many ways to answer this question, but how would you explain why someone should care about the Chattahoochee and Apalachicola rivers?
Well, first, of course, because it's a beautiful river system and set of ecosystems, and it's really in peril. It's very fragile. At the same time, you have the needs of millions of people who live in the Southeast who need water, water that's provided in the Chattahoochee and Flint and Apalachicola watershed. Although many people make the argument that we don't need as much water as we're used to taking, that in particular the people of the greater Atlanta area perhaps have been taking more water than they need, putting an unnecessary strain on the river system. But ultimately, I think we should care about what happens, because the situation in the Southeast is not unique. It's clearly a precursor to what will probably be happening more and more around the country and around the world. And in fact, in a lot of places, it's happening already in the U.S. and elsewhere in the world. I guess the obvious but very often overlooked point is that we just can't take water for granted anymore.
We're just about out of time, but Clay, before we go, tell me, in what way, if any, did reporting on the story change your own life?
It made me very aware of the issue of water, the scarcity of the water, and how precious water is as a resource. I've reported on other water stories. I did a story on the Euphrates River in Turkey and Syria and Iraq. And I've done other water stories from arid regions. But somehow this story, the story of the Chattahoochee and the Apalachicola, brought the awareness of water for me from sort of an intellectual awareness to a visceral awareness of how important and precious it is. On the other hand, or at the same time, I think really what changed me about this story was just the extraordinary collection of amazing people I met in a relatively short period of time, people like Dr. Philip Greer and Marilyn Blackwell and others. People who were profound and poetic and just remarkable individuals involved in this issue.
Well, thanks for taking this time with us, and thank you for such a wonderful piece.
Thank you, Steve.
Clay Scott lives in Helena, Montana.